and I think it was just like this suppressed idea of like, oh, if I say I'm bi, then I can still be straight and I can still be okay with my parents, which is like all kinds of messed up. But yeah, so my high school friends knew when I was about 16, 17. And then from there, like, I moved to Kuwait and I had to come out all over again to some folks. And so it was hard for me to decide whether or not I wanted to come out in Kuwait, mostly again because there are a lot of ideas about what it looks like to be Muslim, to be Arab, and be queer. But I did end up coming out, and I actually had my first relationship in Kuwait, so like it somehow ended up working out. And then when I came here, I just decided that I was going to live openly. Like when I moved to UBC, I was going to just live openly and be who I was. People were very supportive. I think I was mostly surprised by coming out in Kuwait and having folks be supportive. And while I didn't come out to, you know, the entire, like, my entire class or anything like that, the people that I did come out to, the people that I hung out with, the friends that I had were very supportive, were very loving and had my back. And, you know, in the beginning, they, like, made jokes and they were like, I can't believe you didn't come out to us from the beginning. Can't believe you thought we wouldn't have your back, which is, like, again, just an interesting idea of what we have, the ideas that we have about being Arab, being Muslim, being in the Arab world and being queer. People are supportive. People are more supportive than you think that they will be. While I think that coming out is super important, I also recognize the dangers and the safety concerns that some folks may have in coming out. So for me, it's really about, am I going to sever ties with my family and is it worth it? And so that's been a huge process that I'm still trying to figure out in my late 20s, you know, whether or not I want to sever those ties. And while I don't think that they will be severed forever, I do definitely think that it's going to be like a work in progress to rebuild relationships. And I don't think that my relationship with my family will be what it used to be or be what it is now. But it's a learning process, and it's something that I'm working on currently. You know, I've made the decision that I will be coming out at some point in the next, you know, year, two, three, five, who knows? It's going to happen. I just have to kind of recognize that it's okay to take my time and it's okay to seek help and to surround myself by chosen family who is going to accept me for who I am and is going to love me for who I am. I think for me, like, being Arab and being queer is like actively trying to surround myself with people who are Arab or Muslim and queer, just because the mainstream queer community, I'll say, in Vancouver is very like white and cisgender. It's been difficult trying to explain my feelings to people. And it's not anyone's fault, right? It's my own lived experience, which people haven't had. And so surrounding myself by people who have had similar lived experiences or the same lived experience has been the most emotionally eye-opening experience for me. I didn't know that by surrounding myself with people who are Muslim and Arab or Muslim or Arab and queer can be so healing. And I think that that for me is like sort of where I'm seeing my relationships going or investing in relationships that kind of look like that, just so that I can heal the trauma that I live with and trauma that I'm only just now starting to recognize that I have. There are no walls, right? Like, that's the thing. There are no walls in my relationships with my friends. Like, it's open and it's honest and it's heartfelt and it's hard sometimes and you cry sometimes and it's great and it's fucking awesome. Because my family doesn't know, they're like, I've been dating my partner for 2.5 years and they don't know that. They don't know that I have a life here. They don't know that, like, I'm thinking about future and marriage and kids and house, and they don't know any of this. And so for me, the biggest part is like when I go back to visit and my mom is like, so marriage, when is that going to happen? So that's really been the biggest struggle for me, the disconnect of sort of two worlds. I think I just want to say, like, it's okay not to come out. It's okay to take your time in coming out, and that coming out looks different for everyone. And no matter what your journey is and no matter what your coming out story will look like, it is valid and it is real, and own it. Again, I'm 27 years old and I'm just recognizing all this stuff. Like, I can't even imagine what people who are older or younger than me going through right now.
In early June, I did a call out on Facebook asking if anyone in my network wanted to share their story of coming out. Josie was the first person to get back to me. She is an artist and activist who lives off of Commercial Drive. When I arrived at her character home for the interview, her cat made sure she was the center of attention. We settled into her living room to chat.
My name's Josie Boyce. I live in East Vancouver, lived here for a long time, and I'm one of the organizers for the Trans March happening August 4th. I kind of do, what do you call, I guess, you know, Jane or Jack of all trades. I do a lot of poetry. I have three poetry books and that I've published, and I have a memoir, and I also do painting and graphic design. So I do a lot of different artistic endeavors, I guess. Started writing poems in college. I took a creative writing course. I always went to open mics. You know, the first time I did it, which is in Winnipeg, I was just a big ball of sweat. And I was also in the 90s very much in the closet trans-wise. And a lot of it, especially if you look back at some poems I thought that were not about that, actually are about being trans. So I had a lot to say about that and a lot to work out. And then I found, as I've aged, I kind of sort of just want to have prose about that. Very early on in my probably late teens, early 20s, I started identifying as bi or queer. Just then, that was the time, I'm old, that was the time that, you know, queer started becoming a word that was more acceptable usage. People self-identified as opposed to having it be a slur. And I'd always sort of, my whole life, you know, known I was trans, but, you know, as a kid, I didn't have the language for it because it wasn't there, right? You know, there were just, like, sensationalistic stories of transvestites in the National Enquirer and stuff, right? That was the only thing I knew, stories of forced feminization and stuff, or horrible, you know, serial killers in movies, right? So, you know, you kind of don't want to be that, right? You know, but as I got a little older and I did more reading, you know, I definitely read up on stuff, and I started, as soon as I saw the word transgender, I was like, okay, that's me. And, you know, I started coming out to friends and family in my early 20s, and nobody really understood it. Like, I talked to my mom a few years after I first came out to her, and she was like, well, I thought you were telling me you were gay, you know, because she just didn't have any understanding of it either, even though I explained it. I grew up actually in New Brunswick. Okay. In the 70s and the 80s, and then I moved to Winnipeg for university in the 80s. And for me, it was, I really came out here because I wanted to escape the sort of persona that I developed to pretend I wasn't trans, which I had in Winnipeg, and I didn't feel like I could do it there. I wanted to go somewhere new and start over. Right? But it still took me a long time. You know, I've only been transitioning really since 2012. So I sort of was in and out of the closet over the decades since. Mm-hmm. Right? And, you know, always almost transitioning, but not quite where I wasn't ready. When I first got to Vancouver, there was an elder trans woman who started a transgender support group. And because she was using that terminology, I went. And that really helped me sort of, at that time, be able to come out to my mom and some of my friends, because I had sort of a little bit of a support, you know, in the community. And that led me to, you know, like going to the old gender clinic on Heather Street, and where there was so much gatekeeping, I wasn't able, like I couldn't, I started to transition in 95, and I had to stop because there was too much gatekeeping, too much psychiatry, and now there's not. To physically transition, you know, as they would have put it, yeah, you needed to talk to a lot of psychiatrists, not just one, not just once. And there was the whole thing then of the, you know, you had to live as the other gender, because they only considered there to be two. You couldn't, like, I would tell them that I would mention being bi, and the psychiatrist literally were telling me, like, oh, you shouldn't say that, right? Because, you know, they wanted you to be this version of a woman that was, you know, maybe 20 or 30 years out of date. You know, I was only 29 years old, and I was wearing kind of sexy clothes, and they're like, you should be maybe a little more conservative. And I'm like, I'm not even 30, you know, like, Yeah, it, for me, it was just, there was too much psychiatry and too much, like, just, you know, having to justify yourself, right? You had to prove it. When I came back from Japan in 2005, I came back specifically because I wanted to start transitioning. But when I got back here, you know, it was my old friends and my, you know, old lifestyle. So I sort of fell back into that and didn't. And I got really heavy, very unhealthy. I was drinking a lot of drugs. And I ended up in the hospital with a ridiculous high blood pressure. I had a bit of a cardiac infarction or whatever they say. And that kind of, you know, really threw me for a loop. And, you know, I could have died. And so then I said, okay, I'm going to at least start the process, right? So I want to talk to a doctor about it. And my doctor at my clinic didn't know much about it, but, you know, referred me to the current gender clinic was at the time. And this is late 2000s, like 2008 or something. It took me 4 years to get an appointment with a gender specialist. And literally the day that I got the phone call, I'd been waiting for 4 years, and I'd called many times and left messages myself. I got my doctor to write about like 5 or 6 letters, right? And just could not get a response, right? And I was feeling kind of cursed, like, am I just falling through the bureaucracy, or is there that big a wait list? And so they called me, but literally that day, I was going to go home and kill myself. I was that depressed. I was starting to really be a jerk at work, and, you know, my coworkers were calling me out on it and stuff. And I just was like, I had enough. And I got some beer and some pizza, and I was going to go home, have a nice dinner, and then get in the bathtub and slip my wrists. And when I came home, before I even had the beer and pizza, I saw there was a blinking light on my answering machine, which I still had one of those old answering machines. It was blinking light. And I picked it up, and it was the gender clinic calling and saying, hey, you can get an appointment in January. Call us tomorrow. And if you get this after 6, which it was, and we will set you up an appointment so you can talk to a specialist. And I was like, oh, okay. So I didn't kill myself, but I still ate the beer and pizza. And the next day, I was much brighter and happier at work, and I kind of talked to some of my coworkers about it. I explained this without talking about suicide, I don't think. But I talked to my coworkers about what my stress was, right? And they were very understanding. And then and I called right away in the morning when I got up. I don't know that I slept. I called and, you know, set up an appointment for early January, right? And I just did it. I had nothing really but positive experiences with that, you know, like maybe a few weird things, but like, and I transitioned really in public, working at Black Dog Video on Commercial Drive as the manager. Probably the best feedback I ever got was from, there were 2 or 3 older than me ladies who came in and were kind of like, oh, well, you're wearing dresses now, you know? And I explained to them whatever, and they'd be like, wow. Well, you know, I want to tell you that, and I had this happen 3 times. Somebody said almost the exact same language. I want to tell you that you're a much nicer woman than you ever were a man. I was like, oh, thank you. It was really difficult because I think most of the time I was sort of, whether I was dating a man or a woman or somebody identified as one of those things, you kind of went with the assumption that they had that you were just attracted to people like them, right? Because just to bring it up, when you first start dating, a lot of people scare you away. And literally anybody I dated long enough and I sort of came out as trans to them, ghosted before it was a term, you know, just no more contact. People just left. One woman left the city. She went back to Calgary.
Oh my god, that's drastic.
Yeah, I used to go to gay clubs, but I went there just to see the drag queens and stuff, or trans people who were around, and talk to them. Mm-hmm. You know, it was easier to pretend to be straight, actually, as much as maybe the sex was fun. Mm-hmm. The culture of it for me was just like, okay, I don't fit in the cultures I've tried at home of being straight. I didn't fit in being gay. I didn't fit in because all that stuff was conflated, in even in my own mind, with gender, right? And I had to get that sorted out first before I think I could really understand my own sexuality. Mm-hmm. because, you know, I had been in and out of the closet and out, and so I'm out, and then, you know, people are getting used to it, and then I'm back in. And you could always tell because back then, you know, I was really presenting male 90% of the time. And, you know, if I was really presenting male, I would grow facial hair, right? And always really interesting facial hair. It wasn't just, you know, a goatee, of the, like everybody in the 90s had a goatee, right? I had a big biker, big mustache with a little beard like going down like this, and big sideburns. You know, bikers used to buy me drinks because I had cool facial hair and would, you know, ask me about my motorcycle and stuff. And I would say, you know, I don't have one. I'm just cool. But I thought, well, if I'm trapped this way, having to present as a guy, then, you know, I'm going to try. And I tried and I tried. It just, you know, it just never take for very long. It would be a few months later, and then I'd be shaving everything off and secretly dressing at home. Then eventually I would start going out to parties or clubs and stuff. And then, I don't know, something would happen. I'd be into a girl or something, and she really wasn't into somebody who was cross-dressing. And, you know, so it'd go back in the closet for a bit, right? But then it'll always come back. I think the terms are for other people. I'm Josie, I'm transgender, and I'm sexual. That's it. There's no prefix for me. It's just, I don't need it.
You are listening to Full Spectrum Rainbow Waves on until 7 p.m. 8 hours of Pride-themed programming on CITR 101.9 FM. Stay tuned for documentaries, performances, and music by and about LGBTQIA2S+ individuals. Happy Pride to all our listeners.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thinkum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya,
and the Scatulia, Talitin, Homasquim, Mustail. You are tuned in right now to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Thank you so much for tuning in over the last few hours. You are listening to Full Spectrum Rainbow Waves, special programming for Pride 2017. The story you just heard was called Coming Out of the Alphabet Soup. It was produced by myself and Elizabeth Holiday, almost said Elizabeth Taylor. She is equally magnanimous in my opinion, but they are very different people. Elizabeth Holiday, and it was a series of interviews that we did with pansexual, bisexual, queer, and trans-identified folks from all over North America. We had additional interviews from folks who were living as far away as New York City, and we weren't able to include all of them, but we just wanted to thank everyone who reached out and got involved, who was willing to share their story. It was very incredible to witness the amount of enthusiasm there was for sharing those stories, especially as two people who identify as queer ourselves, seeing that there's a lot of energy and care in that community was inspiring. So cheers to everyone who participated and everyone who listened. Thank you again. Over the next 45 minutes, I'm going to have a mix of music for folks from Slut Island, which is a music festival and arts festival that just finished up in Montreal. But before we get to tunes, I have a few more messages from you, so stay tuned and you'll get to learn a little bit about the bike co-op at UBC.
The world is a better place because of Kim Kardashian's empire,
Cheetos,
fleece material,
and Discorder.
It's a local independent music magazine from CITR.
Which means that we can print whatever we heckin' want.
Album and live show reviews, interviews with artists, and sweet illustrations grace our pages.
And even you, listener, can contribute.
Just visit citr.ca/discorder/contribute.
You can grab it around town or read it at discorder.ca.
Forever local and forever free.
Throw up my hands. LGBTQ2I Night is a positive space for folks to learn about bike maintenance in a relaxed environment led by queer mechanics and volunteers. It takes place on the fourth Wednesday of every month at the Bike Kitchen on UBC's campus. Bring your own bike and fix them with our tools, come with questions and ask away, or learn by watching other folks work on their bikes. Beginners are always welcome. This event is entirely free to attend and there will be free pizza. For more information, visit bikecoop.ca.
So first up on this Slut Island inspired Rainbow Waves mix, first I'll tell you a little bit about what Slut Island is, just in case folks are not aware. So Slut Island, not to be confused with Sled Island in Calgary, which is what I thought it was initially, because the word slut and sled are kind of similar. So Slut Island is out of Montreal. It is a queer DIY project that is centered around building events that focus on anti-oppressive values on a quest for inclusive and safer spaces. They aim to represent artists who exist in contrast to cisgendered, white, heterosexual, capitalist, patriarchal values. They invite marginalized voices, bodies, artists, and others to showcase their work in an encouraging and judgment-free environment. Our very own editor of Discorder, Britt Bachman, was there in the last couple of weeks. You may have followed the Discorder Instagram story or post to see some of what she experienced. She was telling me before I came on air today about one night that she went to that was exclusively trans artists and performers. So I have some tracks from folks who performed, who were part of the trans community. But first, I actually have a track from someone who's from Vancouver but who did perform. They are called Molotov Cock Girl, and the track is Consumed.
Oh no, not! I can't say it! This is a villain so evil, so sinister, so horribly vile, that even the utterance of his name strikes fear into the hearts of men. The only safe way to refer to this King of Darkness is simply... him.
You're listening to a mix by Coco Supreme out of Toronto. She was one of the performers at Slut Island. Before that, I had a track for you from Molotov Cock Girl, who is from Vancouver. And up next, I've got a song from Chalks out of Edmonton. Lovely bubblegum dream pop princess. The song is Sidewalk Vertex. To hear the rest of this Coco Supreme mix, just do a Google. You'll find her, and it's about half an hour long. The whole thing is amazing, but I'm not going to play it all for you right now. Make you do a little work yourself. We'll be right back. Up next, I have tracks for you from a record label out of New York called Trans Trenders. They are a non-profit record label for transgender artists only, which is wonderful. It's so wonderful. I found out about them when I was doing some research on SLED. The first group that I'm going to play a track for you from on the Trans Trenders, it's a bit of a tongue twister, Trans Trenders record label out of New York City. I assume New York City, but I'm not totally sure. Maybe just New York State. Anyways, the first is called Power Couple, and the track is Punch Nazis.
With a chronic, yeah. No middle man, I need profits, yeah. She tells me where to deposit. Give her what she want, come on, take a non-profit. No mercy for the racist, no. Wake up, punch a couple Nazis. Take a breath, make me some coffee, yeah. Gotta stay woke if you wanna catch bodies. Punch Nazis, yeah. Punch Nazis, yeah. Punch Nazis, yeah. Shoot them up like they zombies, yeah. Punch Nazis, yeah. Punch Nazis, yeah. Punch Nazis, yeah. Shoot them up like they zombies, yeah. My whole nature got you inferior. Don't choke behind the white sheets because you really scared. I know it's a problem, my black trans ass is too rowdy. I'm loud and too strong and I'm proud to be me. Marching like Martin, blessed like Moses, helping us be free. I know you don't recognize a human being when you look at thumping to the drum of your privilege. Oh, say, can you see that? That would never be a knowing. Yes, a master in me. Every word, yep, that's what they said. But I rip ground some hoes, yeah, the walking dead. Nazi popping, body rocking, fuck calling cops. Said you don't want it with the king.
Yeah,
at these.
My chronic with a chronic, yeah. No middle man, I need profits, yeah. She tells me where to deposit. Give her what she want, come on, take a non-profit. No mercy for the racist, no. Wake up, punch a couple Nazis. Take a breath, make me some coffee, yeah. Gotta stay woke if you wanna catch bodies. Punch Nazis, yeah. Punch Nazis, yeah. Punch Nazis, yeah. Shoot them up like they zombies, yeah. Punch Nazis, yeah. Punch Nazis, yeah. Punch Nazis, yeah. Shoot them up like they zombies, yeah. My trunk is full, yeah, my clip is empty. My girl is me, yeah, she knows it's healthy. I'm so trans, always on stealth. Niggas act woke, but they only fuck Becky. My in crying is my soundtrack. If you come for me, break your face like a Kit Kat. Get off, I'm trolling the outright. And I'm so fucking black, I don't care if I'm lying. I shoot Nazis like they zombies, yeah. I don't give a fuck. Yeah, my rien d'aller fait enculé. Yeah, I don't give a fuck. And everything you say about me, my nigga, I don't give a fuck. Yeah, I'm too busy making it, my nigga. Fuck. I'm black trans and I'm letting everybody in the room feel so uncomfortable. Should be hating myself, but look at me, yeah, I'm invincible. Look at me, yeah, I'm invincible. Chronic with a chronic, yeah. No middle man, I need profits, yeah. She tells me where to deposit. Give her what she want, come on, take a non-profit. No mercy for the racist, no. Wake up, punch a couple Nazis. Take a breath, make me some coffee, yeah. Gotta stay woke if you wanna catch bodies. Punch Nazis. Punch Nazis, yeah. Punch Nazis. Shoot them up like they zombies, yeah. Punch Nazis. Punch Nazis, yeah. Punch Nazis, yeah. Shoot them up like they zombies, yeah.
Trigger, as you wear the banger.
Wasting my time on it, all my
my time on it. That's what y'all think I finna do. Faking the grind, homie, all the time, homie. That's what these fake ass niggas do. Working my last nerve. Yeah. Gonna ask y'all to swerve. Yeah. Cause you in the wrong lane, gonna make you feel the pain. Y'all got your pinkies up, get squirt the real brain.
What?